Hello, and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster, and I am here live in person with the absolute whole crew today. So we've got Stephanie, Brett, and Mark. How are you guys enjoying Ignite?
It's pretty fantastic. Busy week.
You startled me there. I thought you were a houseplant. So for those not able to see us, which you can't since this is audio only, Stephanie has got the most amazing camouflage on I've ever seen.
I have a very special jacket for the diversity and inclusion track going on here at Microsoft Ignite. So it's very, we'll say loud, colorful.
It's like late 80s kind of silk, like a school jacket too. So it's kind of shiny and...
It looks like a houseplant.
It does.
You know what? I like this jacket and I'm warm. This whole place is freezing.
It absolutely is freezing.
Well, if anybody can pull off looking like a houseplant, it is absolutely you. So, yeah.
Now, you've got the same jacket on, actually.
I do.
The jacket we should talk about that.
Well, we both did a session today on mentoring, and one of the speakers, like, one of the things they get is speakers with these jackets, and luckily it's reversible. So the other side is black. There's no style to it whatsoever. It's nice, simple black. Even says Microsoft, very faded, so you can barely see it. I can't even find it right now.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah. So it goes from like, you know, super cool tactical assassin, you know, jacket to houseplant.
Well, and the thing is, like, it's how are you feeling, right? Are you feeling like you just want to, like, you know, be black and boring like me, or do you want to be a vivid houseplant like Stephanie?
It's like the badges, right? The talk to me anytime or the don't talk to me.
Next registration, they had these buttons, and the buttons say either I'm not talking right now, and I guess it's for introverts who don't want to talk. There's one that is...
You have plenty of pieces of flair, too, my friend.
Hey, thanks for that. One says talk to me anytime, and one says talk to me if you know me.
All right.
And I was like, I really, really want to put that one on that says I'm not talking right now. But, you know, in my line of work, that would really be bad. So I had to choose.
I don't think I've seen you stop talking this whole time. But it's good, though. It's a good thing.
What's
right?
that supposed to mean?
No, it's good. I mean, it's good to see you out working. And, you know, you're definitely customer facing. Right. So I've seen you interact with your customers and stuff. And you're just dang good at it.
So we have a special guest here, Eric. And Eric, you're not wearing your hat. Is that the same sort of thing as the button?
Hey. I'm not wearing my hat for two reasons. One, so people walking by don't know we're in here.
Exactly.
Number one, and then they come pounding on the glass, which you know they will do. And number two, because this is audio only and nobody could see the hat. Just like they can't see the jacket you're talking so much about.
Right.
I should set up an impromptu webcast right now so we can get this on camera and people can actually see this happen.
Yeah, it's funny indeed. So introduce yourself.
Do I need an introduction?
Maybe. I mean,
Eric Shubs, you know me or you don't. Yep. Either way, don't talk to me.
Right. He is the reason you can blame him for me. That's what I always say.
It is true. I missed the button that said I only know JavaScript. They didn't have one of those for you?
I've got no comeback for that.
So what have you guys seen? I guess, Mark, what have you seen between the keynote and today that's kind of been a wow moment, kind of an aha moment?
I can't say I've had necessarily any wow moments, but I can say the things that they're obviously that are like the most visible that I've seen is, of course, Project Cortex that they've talked a lot about. And then, on the other hand, they've got the renaming of Flow to Power Automate. So that was probably the two biggest things I'm hearing people talk about that I'm seeing the most about. And then of course they announced that, you know, private channels and teams are going to start rolling out. So
you said it, my friend. You said it on this show.
Yep.
It's on you.
Is that an NDA violation?
Apparently, no, not now. But you never know. It could be. It could have been.
As long as Rob doesn't say it, we're safe.
That's
right.
That's right. No, I mean, I think it's good. The Power Automate. I think it's obviously just a rebrand, right? It's just a rebrand of the tool. Same stuff. Now called Power Automate. I mean, I think they're probably going to expand on that. But I think it's, I heard some rumbling about it, but who cares what it's called, right? I mean, if you can just use it, still use it to solve problems, and it starts advancing.
All those people who bought URLs with the word flow in it, all those people who branded their companies with the word flow in it.
Apparently, you still create a flow within Power Automate, though.
Yeah.
Really? Yes. So is it still called?
Yeah, Power Automate is the platform.
You? Is and it that's a what flow I, no, or no, an that, automation?
Ooh.
I think it'll probably be an automation, but right now it's still called a flow. So Power Automate is a collection of flows. It's a platform for storing your flows. Right? It's how
well, the message has been a little bit confusing, right? The blog post that came out said it was a rebrand, right? Flow is now Power Automate. But the way they've been messaging it here has been more about it being a platform play, right? Which I think longer term is probably the direction they want to see it go, because we've now also got the Power, another one that just rolls so easily off the tongue, Power Virtual Agents, right? Somebody obviously trademarked PowerBots, right? So they couldn't take that one. You can sort of see them starting to string that together into a suite of
Power Platform
services under Power Platform.
Well, right now it's all under Dynamics, right? And I think it's going to be the play to break it out as its own independent offering, right? Because right now, the way you manage it to do all that stuff from an admin perspective is you have to be a Dynamics admin, right? So the way all that stuff is based under the Dynamics umbrella. And if they could break it out to where it's its own management platform from an, you know, from an IT perspective of managing and deploying and all that kind of stuff, I think it'll be for the best. Because I think you have to break it away. It's just it's so invasive to the platform.
They absolutely have to drop the share from SharePoint, though, and make that part of the Power Platform. And we'll have PowerPoint.
They should
PowerPoint.
Call it PowerPoint.
PowerPoint. Great name.
Which is fine, because Microsoft's always changing the name of stuff to be something else, right? Surface. So we could just make PowerPoint into SharePoint. PowerPoint could be, I don't know, something
Sway.
Else.
Slide.
There you go.
Power slide.
Oh my gosh. Power slide, you guys.
Sounds like something Eric does in his truck, I think. I don't know. Power slides.
Not with those tires.
No
sliders happening there.
You know, Brett and I intended one of the diversity and inclusion track sessions today, and it was on preventing IT burnout. It's like how to recognize it in yourself and how to recognize it in the people around you so that you can help them react. And, you know, it's nothing to do with technology. I think it's all like soft skill stuff. And I thought it was a fantastic session, you know, because I've been one to experience that. I think we all have. Mine required medical attention. But I thought it was a really fantastic thing to start talking about, because what we do is important, but we still need to make sure that we can wake up in the mornings. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it was all about that. And I think it's a great conversation to have here at this show, because I think there could be people out there struggling, and it's a good thing to have that dialogue.
Isn't the test for that, are you burned out? Do you do SharePoint?
Yeah.
In the burned out lane you go.
Yeah.
Well, it was more contributing factors other than your job, right, that could burn you out. It could be things that are happening around you with your family, or it could be, you know, whatever, you know, things that contribute to stress that burn you out. And it was focused more around that in conjunction with, yeah, you could have a hard job too, or a stressful job too, but it's really recognizing the psychological components.
Don't you wonder, though, if Microsoft isn't contributing to that problem? If you look at that keynote yesterday and all the surface area that was covered, right, and everything we see in the gazillion session that's got going, you've got to feel overwhelmed. If you're a generalist, right, and you come in here going, well, I need to know more about Azure.
Mm-hmm.
Azure what?
Right.
Right? There's so much stuff, and some of it is so big, like the Synapse stuff and the Arc and Azure Stack, and there's really big stuff with a lot of moving pieces. How do you not feel like you're constantly running behind?
Right.
Just trying to catch up. I mean, if you've been doing it as long as we have, you kind of know what to ignore and what to let pass the filter and whatnot, but someone young starting out in this business trying to figure out what to do?
I wouldn't like to be a newbie to this whole platform. Absolutely. I mean, even as an end user, there's a lot of things that are confusing. You know, where do you put your documents? Where do you create your tasks now? There's like 20 different options for all of those things. And you know, do you use a document library? Do you use OneDrive? And or do you use Teams?
Or Yammer,
et cetera. How do you even know where to go to do?
Yeah. Well, how do you use JavaScript with it all? I think that's the
Key one for end users. Yeah,
That's what keeps me up at night.
So I guess that's where the mentoring comes in, because also in the diversity track, you have the mentoring on conference and sessions and all of that. So for those that are new to the platform, lots going on, you know, maybe a mentoring session might also be good.
So what is this unconference thing? I saw that over there, and I've heard people talk about what's going on with that.
70-minute session, and it's partially session, like normal session, but it's a smaller breakdown. So like there were maybe 35 people in the room, 36. And then you also have kind of a workshop feel for part of it too. So what we did in the mentoring workshop, we kind of broke things down and said, how do you pitch to someone who you want to be your mentor, and it's not just walking up and asking for it. How do you get to the point where you're ready and you know what you want and you know the person? What are the steps behind that? So it's just little, you know, a lot of the sessions here are 20 minutes, 40 minutes, gives you a little bit more time to actually go and build on just the session piece.
So it's quite interesting you mentioned that, and that is, this is nothing to do with Ignite, so I'll just mention it for a little bit, but I've actually started using this platform called Genius U, and it's designed for like business owners and so on that want to grow and so on. And what it is it basically profiles you. You do a profile test, and it pigeonholes you into like one of four different categories and so on. And you get the platform is very much like Facebook. So you build up a profile, you build up what your skills are and so on. You can put yourself into different circles and comment on other people's posts. So they might have a question, you can comment on it, and somebody might decide, you know, I want you to be my mentor. And you can choose whether or not you want to mentor them and so on. So that, for me, is sort of like a great step in that direction.
And Microsoft's actually kind of headed that direction anyway. The Community Mentor Program has partnered with an app called Tribute. So it's a startup, and it's fantastic because you can go fill out a profile and you can kind of, you know, about yourself and then decide, am I a mentor, a mentee, et cetera? And then you can find and connect with others that are all also part of the Microsoft
Sounds
tech
like
community.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, great. Exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Microsoft supported, so you actually log into it with your Microsoft Tech Community account to get access, and that way you can start to get connected with others and try to find someone with mutual interest. And it's not just skills, but also you can list life experiences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the empty nest thing or going back into the workforce after having a child or, you know, those sorts of life experiences that are also impacting, kind of to your point, Rob, with, you know, the extra things that impact your job, maybe you need mentoring around some of those things as well. So, yeah, it's a great app. It's super easy to go in, download it, sign in.
Where do we find that? Would that be in the show notes? Or?
Yeah. We'll make sure that makes the show notes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But no, I've signed on as a mentor. I've actually got two mentees from it, so it's really kind of cool.
Oh, now I got to sign in and find out who they are and steer them back in the right direction.
One of them is my son.
Certain
so
things can't be allowed.
Yeah, but my son actually signed in. And
obviously, there's no oversight in this program.
So your son is working through college, but in the industry, working in the industry. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But that's super cool. How are you going to feel when he shows up to Ignite? And he's like, oh, Dad, you know, what parties are tonight?
So, you know, as long as he's 21. But, he's actually, we've been talking with the Microsoft Ignite the Tour people about him potentially doing a session for Ignite the Tour as like a next generation.
That would rock.
Yeah, so he's actually already starting to get plugged into all of that.
That would rock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's seriously, because, I mean, I would go just to see what his experience is in up and coming to see, you know, As a new young developer, right, that's actually making money, it's like a 19-year-old or it's 19-year-old, I would be interested in his experience and what he thinks about it. And, you know, because he's never seen a world to where he doesn't have tools like Visual Studio 2019.
Right.
We all have, right? We had, you know, I started out with InterDev and, you know, and kind of worked our way up. But, I mean, he's never seen a world to where the IDE sucked. I mean, whatever. Or, you know, there's all of this. These tools that are available to him, right? And he can really hit the ground running.
But the thing is, like, I may have said this on the show before, I don't know, but he didn't grow up learning to program. He grew up playing Minecraft all the time. And in Minecraft, they've got that redstone where you can create circuits. And he loved creating calculators and stuff out of the redstone. So when I put him through Andrew Connell's SharePoint Framework course, he picked it right up. And no problems learning how to do the JavaScript and the TypeScript. And, you know, and he's doing intern work for us, doing SharePoint framework stuff, and he's able to grasp it. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
They had a couple announcements this week around that too. Visual Studio Online, right, as a proper online IDE.
What do you think about that? Because you know you do a lot of dev work, and what do you think about some of the new dev tools and the direction they're going with that?
Well, they're starting to toe an interesting line with Visual Studio Code because it's on the cusp of becoming full blown Visual Studio, right? And they're what they're lacking is the extensibility model the Visual Studio has, which is one of the things that made it so successful. And they're lacking the deep Azure integration to the rest of the platform. It's getting a little bit better as they add more tools to it. But they're going to have to make a decision. Are they going to make that a full-blown IDE, or is it continue to be a light IDE? The advantage of being a light IDE is I've run across people, random encounters. I was sitting in a place getting the glass replaced on my truck, and there's a guy next to me waiting for his truck to be done. He's got his Mac flipped open. He's working in VS Code. And I looked over and I said, if you don't mind my asking, what are you working on? And he just works for some company that does something over in Java, whatnot. Nothing whatsoever, even close to what we're doing. And yet he's using VS Code. Hmm. Well, they make it too much like the Visual Studio that we all love. They risk alienating those folks for whom they pick it up easily. And for the new folks coming into the platform, because devving on Visual Studio is not, there's a learning curve.
Yep.
So I think that VS Online can help bring new people along. Obviously, they need to do something to compete with Google and whatnot that are getting these tools into the schools very early, and it's all web-based and it's easy access and what. So they have to do something there. But I think maybe that's going to become that first step IDE before you graduate into VS Code and then potentially into full Visual Studio.
Hmm. What do you think about do you believe that Visual Studio will eventually go away with Visual Studio Online, and we'll do it like now? You know, we used to have servers, and we used to have all of our dev machines on our laptops, and you know, VMs and all this kind of crap. Now it's all Azure based, right? Everything I do is in Azure. I would never have a VM, you know, on my laptop. Do you think Visual Studio will go the same direction?
No. The key thing of what you just said is what you do is in Azure. But that's a small segment of people out there building solutions on the Microsoft platform. You got to remember, there's still hundreds of thousands of C++ programmers out there. They're writing the code that runs cars and manufacturing plants, and they're doing, if you will, the real work on the platform. I think what will change is you'll see traditional Win32 desktop embedded that F-sharp kind of C++, F-sharp, that sort of code will stay in the Visual Studio, traditional Visual Studio IDE. All the cloud-based stuff will be done in VS Code or potentially even VS Online. But it sounds great to be in the cloud till you get on an airplane.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you're done. Right. You can't work on any of your stuff. Mm. So great while you're connected. Not so great, as we all know who travel a lot. What if I get a support call right before I get on the plane? Well, I can't help you for the next 10 hours because I have to use this online tool. Whereas if I have it local, at least I got my local GitHub repo. I can work on the problem and then publish it when I'm done.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. Fair point. Yeah.
And I think that goes, well, not just for coding, but everything now. It's just the internet here dropped yesterday, and I was there making notes in OneNote online, and all of a sudden I couldn't. So it's you are really heavily reliant upon the internet all the time, and. Mm. It's just not everywhere.
Conferences always expose that, don't they? I don't know why it's so hard to get internet to 20,000 people at a time in a building, but nobody can ever pull it off.
Uh-huh. Absolutely right.
And as a former network engineer, I really don't understand the problem of getting all these people connect. But for whatever reason, it's hard, right? So everybody here is looking at all these fantastic Azure tools, yet they can't log into their tenant to go play with it and preview in Azure because they can't get connectivity.
That's certainly one of the downsides. You mentioned Minecraft.
Yes.
A bit ago. So, Eric, tell us about your experience of Minecraft yesterday.
Well, that was it. At the very end of the keynote, they did this kind of weird Minecraft demo. The concept is cool. They were using Azure Spatial Anchors. Is that what they called it? Or Spatial? Something
like
Spatial.
That.
Where they were tagging them to a virtual surface. So you could see Satya walking around and the Minecraft people walking around. But the funny part was that the Minecraft people had no idea what was going on in the game. And if you've ever, obviously you've done it because your kid played Minecraft. I watch my kids play. They got no idea what's going on in that game either. Right? They built the world. They have no clue what's going on. Right? They'll trap their pig in a building somewhere and they can't figure out how to get him out. Or, you know, just weird stuff that happens, and it was just hilarious to watch the Minecraft people clueless as to what was going on in their own game. kind of like a SharePoint people, isn't it? But and then the duck got roasted in boiling lava, right? The skeleton disappeared, and they went to break out the chicken by building some rails that, and then they lost the chicken. It was just the weirdest end to a keynote that I've ever. And then Satya just kind of said, okay, and walked away at the end.
Sounds like a Monty Python movie.
It's over? Okay. I guess
we'll go do something else now.
And now for something completely different.
I think the other cool thing in the keynote was the Superman glass.
That was awesome.
That was sick. Yeah, that was really cool.
That was stuff. You know, there's those, we kind of forward project Star Trek-y kind of stuff, you know, that this is how things will be in the future. But as we've learned, we don't often see things develop that way. Like, it's 2019. Where's my flying car and, you know, my robot gymnast and all that? Where's my cool future stuff? But that was one of those cool future gadget things that's actually come to life.
Why don't you explain it to them?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is all to do with storage, right? And they use Disney as the case study for it. So they had all the original movies and everything all stored with inside this warehouse. It's
like
temperature controlled.
On film.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it had to be temperature controlled to protect the tape because obviously it's fragile and so on. So they wanted to come up with a solution that would allow better storage and protect it.
And they were making the point about how even hard drive storage is subject to heat and magnetic activity and whatnot. And of course, if you get it wet. So they were saying that the traditional storage mechanisms that we have are still very fragile. And then he pulls out this sheet of quartz that was, what, about 2 inches square, right? And they used, I'm going to get this totally wrong, etching, but they used like holographic 3D etching on this thing to take the whole Superman movie and put it on just part of this piece of glass. And then they boiled it, cooked it, dropped it, kicked it around, did all this stuff to it. And they still had the Superman movie in its raw form, these, you know, gigabytes of data unaltered on an almost indestructible medium. Just imagine data center density with that type of storage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what the access speeds are and how fast you'd get data. Obviously, writing is a problem. But writing was a problem when we came up with optical discs,
too. That's
true. It was.
Back in the day. You know, write once, read many. No, kids don't worm know what drive. Worm means. Yeah.
Worm drive.
They think that's one of the bad science fiction movies we make them watch. Back in our day, we had worm drive.
That's right. So, well, now your tweets will never really ever go away, right?
They're exactly. Yeah.
Indestructible.
That was really cool.
That's next level stuff, right? I mean, very, very cool. You know, and I think it's good because it's really with the potentials of, I'm not going to get into the politics of climate change, right? To where, I mean, it could be a real deal, and it is a real deal, but but you don't have to worry about that, and we can preserve our history, right? Because that's what those film that film that they actually shot those movies on is part of our cultural history, you know, of humanity. And more than just film, right? But I think it's, we could put so many things on that back up, you know. You don't have to worry about the climate control stuff and throwing a cave.
So we don't have to worry about, you know, climate change anymore is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Solves a problem.
Okay.
Well, you have to ask yourself, though, what happens to these mediums when we don't have them anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. How do you read them?
Yeah. So we can talk all we want about our technological advances and we don't etch things in stone anymore, but the stuff that was etched in stone is still there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. We may not know how to read it, right? But it's still there. All this stuff we have now, right? It's all going to be gone, right? So how are people, when somebody 1,000 years from now gets this little square of quartz, how are they going to read the thing and know what's on it, right? Try going out and finding a cassette recorder right now, right, that will play back. Your good old-fashioned, you know, click, two buttons to record. Go try and find one.
Or even buying a CD now.
Or buy film for a camera, right, for a film-based camera. You can't find it. You used to find it everywhere. You can't find it. I don't even know where you would go to get the stuff developed.
And who's going
to
develop it when you find those rolls that your grandpa took, right? Yep. Who's going to develop all this film?
In case anyone needs one, my mother-in-law has them all.
She got it all sorted. All right, we have a source now. We know where we go.
We had one surface during a history of technology project for one of my kids, and she brought one to our house.
Brought a film camera?
No, the cassette recorder.
Oh, wow.
The kids just look at it like,
What is that?
Yeah, they have to teach them about these things now, so it makes me a little sad.
What's in history class now? Yeah.
This vintage equipment. You know? Yeah.
I just make my kids watch Back to the Future, and that's all I do. So, so Project Cortex. I'm really intrigued by your guys' thoughts on Project Cortex. So,
well, potentially expensive.
Definitely expensive.
Let's
I think more definitely than potentially.
let's isolate the cost for now, because I've got some thoughts on that. But yeah, I mean, I think from a capabilities perspective, it is the single knowledge. He didn't call it knowledge management. He called it something else.
It was, but it is not knowledge category.
Center is the portal.
Knowledge center. But he said it's knowledge management. But we tried that. It's not, you know. It's the thing that I think many companies have tried and failed at before, right?
Including Microsoft.
Including Microsoft,
times.
Yeah. And so I think if they can pull it off, it's going to be fantastic, because it's going to basically it's going to bring knowledge from around your organization that exists in Office 365, whether it be through email or documents or content posted in SharePoint pages or Teams or whatever, and be able to somehow auto-classify that and start applying different tags to things, and really give you a view on what's important to you based on what you do and what you're doing, kind of, right? So I think it looked like it was a single view, right? My knowledge center might look different than yours and yours, but it's a different view that's more targeted for you, was my take on it.
I think that's where they're going. We can talk about the tech behind it, but what I'm interested in, because they've failed at this so many times, all us old school people remember Knowledge Network and all that sort of stuff. So what I'm really interested in is, like Stephanie's perspective from working with the business as you do, what do you think people's are going to, how do you think they're going to react?
I don't have a good answer for that yet. Like I'm still kind of sorting through the idea that a lot of this content is, I like the idea of the cards, that the information is surfaced to kind of be able to jump over and say, okay, if I need to expand on this idea and learn a little more about it, I like that concept, but it still feels pretty big.
See,
maybe not overwhelming is the word, but it feels like a lot for users, so I just go to this place and I find what I need in like one place.
Well, that thing where you have the cards, like you might have an acronym and or something like that. I think it's what you're talking about.
Yes.
When you hover over, you could be in, type in an email or receive an email, and it's got all these acronyms in it. Mm-hmm. And then it would recognize that acronym. You could hover over it, and it would give you a drop-down card. Now, I think that's awesome. I do believe that would almost have to be a manual process. I don't know how you could automate that.
Or a learning of
managed
training.
Managed metadata. That's going to be managed.
I think it is, right? Because I think it's going to be something you're going to have to define to say, this means this to my organization. And what if you had two acronyms that are the same? Like you might have, Project Green on, this part of your organization that's doing something, and then this part of the organization doesn't know what they're doing. They have another Project Green. And how do you do that? Do you make that meaningful to somebody based on where you are and all of that? So that's really what I think is the is they're going to have to find. That's the problem they're going to have to solve.
Well,
it's because it'll be great to define it once if you're a smaller company.
Right.
If you're a big enterprise, you can have many acronyms, the same acronyms meaning the same thing, different things, right, to different parts of the org.
Right, but so my thought on that, you said small organizations have one acronym. I don't think small organizations are going to go for this. This is a premium add-on, and I think if this is a feature that was part of Office 365, the companies would be like, hey, we've got this, let's use it. But it's not business critical to a small, medium business. It's not going to be business critical to a lot of businesses. So it's going to be a hard sell.
I don't think it's going to be business critical to large enterprises like mine. I mean, I think it's great and it's cool, but I don't know that it's going to be worth $1 a user, right? Whatever the cost is, right? $10 a user. I just don't think it'll go there. Now, the question that I have is that, are they going to surface much of this data and much of these capabilities through the graph? Right, to say, if you don't want to do that and you want to spend the budget to build something similar, maybe add a few key components to your intranet or whatever, can you do that? Are they going to expose those endpoints to where you could have that project, you know, the knowledge center type experience, but wrapped into something.
Well, you can. You can. I mean, with the Office add-ins that you can write with the Fluid framework stuff, you could probably build your own.
But you can build it. But will they? Since it's a premium offering, will they expose the endpoints for you to access if you don't buy that service? Right. Mm-hmm. So they might have a new graph endpoint that you can't get to unless you have that service. Right. So that's my question. The questions I have is like, oh, okay, maybe I don't want that whole experience, but I'd like to be able to build, you know, 1, 2, and 3 components of that and slam it into my intranet, you know?
I don't know. I think they should offer it. I think of this like a premium cable network, like a HBO. Like, you either you want it or you don't. But what do? They give you 3 months free, 6 months free. I think if this is an offering that they gave to a company, like, for 6 months free to get them to use it, to get them to find the value in it.
I'm not sure you can actually make good use of this in 6 months. I think it takes years, right,
so.
To develop and train those models. And
That was my viewpoint. When I saw the demonstration, I was like, yeah, it's a really cool demo, but the seems to be an awful amount of work that would have to get you there.
I think the X factor we have to account here this time that we've never had before is Naomi Moneypenny, because she's the one driving this stuff behind. You can see her fingerprints all over this thing.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually understands these problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, I changed my answer.
Natively. And can rattle them off the top of her head and knows where customer pain points are going to be and knows how the technology works and knows how to bring it together. If they're going to succeed this time, I think it's because they finally brought in someone who can meld the AI side of that in a practical way to make it work, which they never had before. Mm. I'm with Stephanie on this one. I think it's overwhelming, and I'm not sure, because it's going to take so much time to develop it in a way that's useful for organizations, I'm not sure they're going to give it that time, unless they make it part of the E5 or what have you, and people just go ahead and buy it. Maybe they use it, but it seems like a lot of work.
Well, that's a good point. And it's like you just said, it takes a long time, and I'm just thinking about this as you say it. Well, we've now got people used to a world that changes every 3 months, and now we're introducing them to something that's going to take them a year or more to set up. How? I mean, it's just almost like they have to.
But maybe it's worth it. I what I'm missing right now. I want to see what comes out of these the beta testing or whatever the program they have. The preview. That's the word I'm looking for. The preview program. I want to see the case studies that come out of that. What's the real ROI? What's the business use case behind it? I think I'm still missing a piece of that right now on, like, who's going to use this? What's the use case that is so valuable that the company they featured, you know, and Simon's somebody I know through the community, and like, what got them to the point where it was worth that much effort? Somebody needs this. I'm just not clear on who it is yet.
Mm. Well, and I think they're, no matter what, the engine that builds the models behind the scenes, all the ML, is probably running in your tenant right now, right? Because we are amassing so much data with just using the system, uploading documents, modifying things, posting content. If it's not there now, I'd say it's going to be there, and it will be building these models the whole time. But so by the time they do launch it, there will be a significant amount of content there that will be useful.
Possibly. I think that would be a key to any type of success adoption. They did say a couple of things that they haven't said before that I found very interesting. How long have we been trying to get them to understand that the blocker to metadata is people having to put in metadata?
Right.
Right? That's what stops people from using it. Well, they said automated metadata extraction.
There was that. Yeah, that's true.
Right? Yep. And you can train the models. So if you define the models for these keywords, and let's be honest, this is a ton of search on the back end. That's what's really going on here, right? If you can train those models, if you can seed them with certain keywords, right, and then it picks those up from your content, right, that's really good stuff. But something else came up yesterday in our discussion, though, and that is you have documents, right? You're uploading a document. Now you're having conversations around those documents. How does sensitivity and labeling and PII and HIPAA and all that stuff apply to all these various types of contents? Because is a Teams conversation that we're having internally in HR about an employee, right, that contains sensitive data, how is that going to be surfaced? How are we going to see that? What happens if someone walks behind my pane of glass in the knowledge portal, right, and it's surfacing all this PII from I have access to it, right? It was part of conversations that I had, But we make, as humans, we make a distinction. When we're writing a document that we're going to save and send to somebody, we most of the time stop and think, what am I putting in this document?
Yep.
It's got my name on it. Come back to me. We don't think the same way when we're in Teams and Yammer and just carrying on back and forth. But all that stuff is content that's going to be collected by this engine.
I didn't see any of that stuff being surfaced, right? I saw it picks up a lot of metadata, right, on this stuff. So I would see it picking up and identifying things, topics that you're talking about. But I didn't see it as to surface any kind of things like that. It's more, the Knowledge Center seems to be more big, high-level stuff that you can drill down to and help find related things rather than surfacing like you would in search. Right. Whereas, I mean, search would surface that, or I would hope. But I don't know that the Knowledge Center would work that way. I wouldn't expect it to. But we've all just seen a couple of screenshots at this time. So right. Yeah. So it's all up in the air. Right? So I don't know. I mean, maybe you're right.
They seem to have a pretty aggressive timeline for it, though. Out to previews in first of the year. And
yeah.
Yep.
Which makes me think they're a little farther along on this than might meet the eye.
Well, one thing that took me by surprise was the fact that SharePoint's Spaces is moving forwards, so that's going to be previewed what, beginning of next year.
I don't know. I zoned out.
Wait, did they actually say something about Spaces?
Yeah. So I, when I first saw that, I thought this is some sort of crazy vision or something like that, and maybe it might get molded into something similar or whatever. But it.
They announced a public preview.
A public preview starting next year.
Yeah. And this that whole augmented reality SharePoint thing, right?
Yeah.
They're actually going to do that?
They're going to do it.
So if anyone wants to see a little info, I think he brought it up at Jeff Tepper's keynote.
Yes.
That was Monday. Monday.
It was yesterday afternoon. Yep. Yeah.
That was it.
That was only yesterday?
It was only yesterday. But we say yesterday, and the smart one in the room pointed out the date, knowing that our listeners won't be listening to this.
They'll be listening to it in about a month. Is that right, Rob?
Yeah. No, the some of the things I liked, you hit on it a little bit, was the, we've all been working with machine learning and all that, but they've got that machine training engine now, which I think is fantastic, to where you can create your machine learning models as you always did, and then you can help use these trainers to actually train it to start doing analytics and, do what you needed to do. So I thought that was cool. That's something we've always needed as well. And I think that's going to feed into a lot of what we do, at least what we do. I don't know about you guys. Did you see that?
I did. Early doors yet on that to see how they're going to pull that off. Just like they're dipping their toes into some pretty deep waters that I'm not quite sure they understand how deep those waters are. Like robotic process automation is a very deep well. And the people who do that effectively do it because they've been around a long time and they've learned a lot of hard lessons. Trying to automate across lots of different platforms where you're basically training a bot to go do your work for you is exceptionally hard. And if they're going to do it, they're going to have to commit to it and commit a lot of resources to it to make it work. Otherwise, it's just going to be, it does these basic things, and it'll be a me too kind of thing. But them stepping, I think potentially a lot of people were very surprised by that just on the chatter I've seen on some other areas that Microsoft is moving into that space where they've never really been before.
No,
that stopped the conversation, Cold.
I feel this. I was just thinking. I mean, I feel the same way about this quantum computing stuff too, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're going down a road, and it sounds like they announced it what 2 years ago or 3 years ago that they had this big quantum computing initiative. Was it two?
I think it was two.
Yeah, and they had a quantum computer out front. It was on the stage with Satya, and now they kind of mentioned a continuation of that. But I don't. It was a blurb. It wasn't like a full-on thing, but they are doing stuff in there. But I don't know what the end goal is of that, right? So I feel the same thing about that robotic processing stuff is that I think they're jumping into it, but I don't know what the strategic goal is for Microsoft.
Other than
the quantum computing essentially being an arms race.
Right. Yeah, but I took away from that yesterday that Microsoft is doing stuff that's kind of in Microsoft's wheelhouse. They're working with hardware partners, they mentioned that yesterday, who are building quantum machines, and they're building a development language around quantum computing in Q#. So that's solid Microsoft stuff they know how to do, right? They're really good at doing and delivering on those kind of things, and I think that will, because they're in familiar territory to a certain degree, be pretty successful as that moves forward. it still feels like a solution in search of a problem. Like we haven't really figured out how is this going to help us. We're all pretty convinced, like, you know, cold fusion. That's an excellent idea. Boy, that'll solve all sorts of problems. What are those problems?
Well, don't know yet.
But I thought they had a bit of a vision there, certainly more than they've talked about in the past. Like, there was some practical stuff, I think, that was mentioned yesterday, which is the first time we've heard anything really practical about the quantum. I almost said quantum realm. About the quantum piece of the puzzle that they're trying to promote. And obviously, now that they're further along the road with Azure, they have cloud capability. They're basically running a giant quantum computer in the cloud anyway.
Yeah. True.
So much of this, I feel, enterprise-level stuff, you know, Mark and I do a lot of work in the small to mid-market business, and so some of this, we're like, great, that's wonderful. We're never going to use it with our customers because they're not big enough to really take advantage. So what do you guys think about the other announcements? Other smaller things catch your eye?
You know, I'll tell you what was not surprising because we've been kind of privy to some of the things going on, but really encouraging is the announcements around SharePoint. There were a lot. I felt like last year at Ignite, Microsoft finally got their story together with this whole Office 365 vision. And this year they announced a lot of new capabilities specifically around SharePoint that I think is fantastic. Because I was starting to believe that SharePoint was kind of at a plateau, right? And maybe Teams would be kind of taking over that space and SharePoint would become a back-end service. Based on the announcements today or yesterday and all of the stuff around the conference, I don't think that's the case anymore.
There's still a lot of resource developing SharePoint.
Yeah, I think it's still a very much a first class service of Microsoft 365. It's not Teams is not taking their way. It's very much a strategic play for Microsoft.
Teams gives you another entry point to it, but there's so much stuff that SharePoint does that there's no way they're going to replicate that in another platform like that. But I happen to agree with you. We got a lot of SharePoint news yesterday, which was unusual. And we are continuing. There's a bunch of breakout sessions and stuff this week. So I feel like we got a little SharePoint love this time around, which is what the smaller customers will be interested in. It sounds kind of blasé to us, but things like expanded list view, right, and being able to do conditional formatting right there in
that's incredible.
In design surface.
Yeah, yeah.
That has immediate benefit to your customers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas they don't care about, I mean, I want Azure in my backpack, but they don't care about Azure in their backpack, right? They want to be able to see their data, right? And things like the Fluent framework.
Oh,
I think to customers who are having to collaborate in real time on stuff like that, that has practical value.
So explain the Fluent framework.
So we have too many frameworks.
Yeah.
That's what the problem is. Frameworks everywhere. Fluent framework essentially says I have a piece of content, and every application hosting that piece of content has listeners and beacons, such that if I'm working on a table in a Word document, I can extract that table into, say, Teams in a conversation, and as you're updating it in Word in real time, I'm seeing those updates come into Teams. So Teams doesn't have to surface. They're componentizing a lot of the capabilities inside the stack. Bearing in mind this, we're all talking about doing it in Office Online and not on the desktop yet. But it gives us the capability to be more granular in our collaborative activities, and we can also build it into our application. So if we're building an SPFX component.
So that wasn't on the desktop apps. That was all Office Online.
That was all Office Online.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I know they did it. They basically took a piece of a document and they pasted it into an email. And then they also had it in a Word document and a PowerPoint presentation. That is
But if you notice, they also showed some Office add-ins that were doing the similar thing. So that line is blurring.
Yeah.
I think eventually the desktop applications become natively part of that.
That's such a game changer too, man, because I think the instead of having to email a link to a 60-page document, say go to page 32, if it's still page 32 by the time you open the document and look at this one paragraph, you can start emailing that paragraph around. They could make their changes into whatever canvas they're in, right? Whether it's email or it's, you know, you paste it into a Word document and send it to them, and then it updates the source. That is such a game changer to productivity.
That's the idea. And to your point, Stephanie, I think those are the things that smaller customers can get excited about.
There's lots of little things. Sorry.
No, there, like you said, there's a lot of little things. Something as simple as audiencing on the navigation. our customers will be so. They've been asking for that forever. So just the small things will make a huge difference because they can do them without needing to customize, without needing to deploy SharePoint framework web parts or whatever it is. I know, and we've got customers on things like Internet in a Box, third-party tools, and they're looking at all this like home sites that are coming out. Those are finally going live. They're going, wait a minute, do I need these extra tools? Like, I can do this all in 365 and not need that stuff. That conversation for an intranet in SharePoint is finally becoming real. We've had ugly SharePoint sites forever. Modern finally got us into a good place with that, and I think we're finally getting to the point people are starting to go, okay, yeah, we can do this. We can use SharePoint. Even large customers, we've got some bigger customers that are still, they're looking at leaving their third-party tools as well. So
really?
It's really interesting.
Power Apps customizing document libraries. That's pretty simple, but people want to do it.
Yeah, practical,
yep.
And it will get used a lot.
Yep, absolutely. And I think linked to that as well is the fact that, you know, if you're customizing those forms to get the right metadata and so on in a more logical business way, so you're getting the information that you want, and then being able to report on that metadata as well with the managed metadata analytics, I thought was quite a nice feature as well. So seeing how these keywords are being used and where they're being used, etc.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and this is a pretty interesting topic because Ignite traditionally has been big vision, right? Big topics, right? Lots of fuzziness, vapor demoware kind of things. This is directional stuff where we're going. But this is one of the first times we've seen practical, small, right, things you can put into practice today. And a lot of the stuff they're talking about is things they're delivering now, not just we may do this in the future. Check back with us at SBC.
Well, I think that was going back to Project Cortex. They didn't say it like something like SharePoint Spaces. When they announced SharePoint Spaces, they've announced the preview for it to sign up for it, and it's just they're really pushing forward with a lot of stuff. That was my little input there.
Well, have you noticed that they're starting to do a lot more? They have that timeline slide in a lot of these Microsoft presentations, right? Shipping now, shipping first half 2020, second half, top of mind, right? It's showing up all over the place in lots of the slide decks. Like they're having to get better about those release cycles. Because let's be honest, they took some flack in previous years for talking about stuff at Ignite that never saw it. Where
surfaced.
Is it? When's it going to happen?
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting on some stuff from last year in Teams. I mean, really. I mean, I think I heard they're coming, you know, but still. It's
but
really,
you can't talk about it.
Can't talk about it.
So, Rob, private channels, what does it mean to you?
Oh, man, what a journey.
It means he's out of trouble now.
what a journey private channels have been. Private channels and Teams. I've been waiting. We've been waiting on this feature for as long as there's been Teams. Private channels basically has been a thing in Slack forever, and they've just recently solved that problem with Teams. They made the announcement yesterday that it is live. And what you can do is you can create a channel in Teams and mark it as a private channel, and that means that you, the channel creator, are the only one that can see it, and you have to add people as members to that channel. So if you want to have a private conversation, whether it's HR or it's just, you know, sales doc, whatever, you can do that and then hide the contents of that channel from people. So I think it's going to be great. I'm worried about the way they've implemented it, just because of the sprawl it's going to cause in your tenant. So when you create a private channel, what happens is it also creates another site collection.
I heard that. Yeah. A whole site collection.
Yeah. I believe it actually creates another group because it creates another modern group because you have members and owners of that group.
Right.
And then it associates that group as a nested group of your team.
But they did increase the number of site collections to 2 million.
Yeah.
So,
but also, what one thing that I can't visualize.
Which
yet.
It was 500,000 per geo. Per SharePoint geo. Now it's 2 million per SharePoint geo.
Right.
Which I have 8 geos. Right. So we've got an infinite
that
amount.
That sounds easy to manage.
yeah, it's terrible. but no, so we've got 8 geos and that we do have a lot of capacity there, but I can see us filling that, right? I mean, 2 million geos. I mean,
you can audit that.
We've already got, 100,000 modern groups. Just by launching Teams to about 80,000 people, right? So we're growing with our team. We've got about 110,000 on it now, but we're really growing the that. And if private channels, if each one of those teams, let's just say they had you know, three private channels each, which is legit.
Yeah.
I mean, we're already up to 250,000 groups.
But we've also got the ability to share a file from the Files tab in Teams now as well. So you can externally share that, and you can also externally share a file from a private channel to somebody that's not in that private channel.
Right, but am I right in that when you do a private channel, it's within your org? You can't do external to a private channel?
I don't know. I believe the external members have to be at the team level, but I don't think they can be in a private channel.
Interesting.
All I hear is governance issues. Set up your retention policies.
Yes.
Because otherwise this just becomes, it becomes the old SharePoint where you had nested sites and
broken permissions.
And you know a little bit about that. No?
Yeah.
You have a tool or
keep
something?
Keep on breaking permissions is all I can say. No, we have a tool that fixes it.
But I'm overall, I'm really excited about the feature. Our users need it. They want it. They've been asking for it. You know, I think everybody can benefit from it, whether you're big or small. I'm really excited about it, honestly. Yeah. And I'm really excited that I can talk about it.
That you can talk about it. Without being embargoed.
Yeah.
The other thing is we should start doing our podcasts with a video on stream, and then we can get rid of all that background noise from our kids and our dogs. And
that was a cool feature.
Yeah, that was.
That was cool. There's a couple of other platforms that do that. Some of these video conferencing, corporate video conferencing, do that stuff as well. But that is a slick demo when you're talking and then you flip that feature on and then all the background stuff. And they've also got the thing about replacing backgrounds.
Yes.
Behind you. So now you can put a background. It almost doesn't matter where you are. You just put this virtual background behind you, so they can't see that you're sitting in the lobby at the airport or
whenever you
it is.
Speak to Rob. You can have his foot in the background.
Yeah. You can. So, you actually can because who was it?
It happened.
Was it the interview we did with Jeff Teeper that you
I think it was Jace.
Yeah, I think it was Jason.
Jason. Yeah. He put a background of my foot on the.
That's all I can think about when that poor dude with the rash on his arm showed up. Like, we're never getting rid of Rob's foot now. It's going to be in every team, everywhere.
So my question is, when they turn on the background removal, can you hear me talk at all?
There's an automatic mute mark function. We made sure we got that in.
Okay.
That's great. Yeah, I like the background thing because, as somebody that works from home a lot, it's kind of nice to not be able to see whatever's in the background. I usually work in my bonus room, and sometimes my kids trash my bonus room.
Well, it's good for especially those of us that are on the move a lot. You never know where we're going to be when we have to jump on a meeting. I might be at a client and I have to jump on something, and people are walking behind me that I didn't ask their permission to be on this thing, but they're getting webcast out to everybody because they're on this, and all they did was walk by. People don't need to know where you are.
What was that? Was that Teams that they did that transparent person at the whiteboard? Did y'all see that in the demo?
Oh, that was awesome.
That was crazy. Did you see that?
No, the Casper the Friendly Ghost thing that they did where the person went transparent. That was crazy.
That was incredible. I loved that. It was so basically they had somebody writing on a whiteboard. And they wrote, and then they stepped out of the frame, and then they stepped back in the frame to write something else. And the letters they were transparent. So as they were writing, you could still see the whiteboard, even though they're standing in front of it. That was awesome.
So they got the punch out effect, right?
Yeah.
Transparent guy.
Yeah. That's cool. A lot of cool technology. I'm
interesting
really
they could do that with only one camera.
Yeah.
What about, on that same note, is the correction of the eyes when you're looking at
that's just really creepy. I don't need you tracking my eyes while we're in a
did you see that, Mark? You look they had a so in part of Teams, you know how you're when you're looking at Teams your webcam is typically on top of your laptop or whatever,
right?
But you're always like looking down at the people you're talking to, so you're not really looking at them,
right?
So
no, you're looking at yourself.
You're looking at Mark might be so you're looking down, so it never looks like they're looking at you. So they're doing something with eye tracking to where they basically move your eyeballs up to where it looks like you're actually looking
at
them.
That's creepy.
That's exactly
maybe they should just do a snap noise like. Look up. Maybe that'd be more effective.
Well, guys, I know our time here is running short here, and I know we could go for probably 3 or 4 more hours on all this stuff. But
only if someone starts bringing beverages.
Yeah. So, Eric, thanks for joining us today. It was always great to catch up, and I was really surprised to see you here. I'm happy to see you here. It's just great, and you're podcasting every day.
Right? Yeah, we're webcasting every day, doing the DFW SharePoint Community webcast daily. So I'll be back on in a few hours here to do our webcast. We got Laura Rogers with us today to talk all power stuff. I got Rob Bogue on Thursday coming on to talk ECM and Cortex and all that. And, of course, y'all are free to drop in anytime. In fact, I think we're in this very one today. And so we'll be here in the podcast center. So if you see us in here, wander on in. Just remember, we've got a webcam and we're live.
All right. Yeah,
Foster.
Yeah. No,
so watch
no
what
edits.
You're wearing.
No edits.
Actually told Foster that.
Hi, I'm sporting my very new Pate Group shirt today.
I see that.
Yeah, I'm representing the brand, hopefully well.
Are those the gazillion shirts you brought? These ones?
Yes.
Right here?
Yeah, Mark tries to make me carry them around.
She won't do it. She refuses to do it. She's like, no, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I'm like, here, give some shirts away. I'm not going to do that.
Well, we just got the ping of the 5 minutes left. The lady's waving at us out there. So, you know, guys, it's always great to catch up in person. I did bring my podcast recorder. So I've got my mobile recorder. Hopefully we can get another show in before the end of the week. But, you know, as always, it's been great. Wonderful show. And until next time, does anybody have anything you want to close with?
No, just thank you, Eric, for coming on our show. And
thanks, y'all, for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. If you have any questions or comments, email us at info@techsplaining.net, and we will answer your questions live on the air. Thank you so much.
Cheers.